Welcome to Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life. Each month, Galley Table Storytelling hosts a live event in the Kodiak community. Storytellers are given 7 minutes to tell a personal story related to a monthly theme. Tonight, we're going to hear those stories.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. Afternoon. Morning. That's where I'm at. But good evening. We just want to welcome you all to Galley Tables, and thank you so much for coming out. And want to mention again, thank you to the storytellers, because as you might have noticed, we did not have a show last month because we didn't have storytellers. So thanks, guys, for signing up to have this night. Woo! We are your storyboard. This is Astrid. I'm Heather, Grace, Tandi, and Mary Beth is still closing out outside along with Jen. So we are happy to do this for you guys, and thank you for showing up. We would also like to thank KMXT, the Arts Council, and the Kodiak Marketplace for making all of this happen.
Okay, so tonight's theme is Don't Tell Mom. We'll have 7 storytellers. They'll tell a 7 minutes long story. At the 5 minute mark, we'll make this noise for them. And at the 7 minute mark, we'll make this noise for them. Our first storyteller tonight is Allie Kostalecki. Allie is a proud Kodiak kid whose family roots on the island go back to the 1960s when her grandparents first came north to fish. Many longtime Kodiak locals in the room may recognize her grandmother's name, Darlene Williams. She ran Wadlinger's store and was a familiar face in the community for many years. After earning her MBA from Willamette University in Oregon, Allie made the decision to return home to Kodiak. She's joining Galley Tables tonight after years of enjoying the storytelling events from the audience. And as Allie puts it, sometimes if you want to have a village, you have to be a villager, which means stepping to share your own stories too. Welcome, Allie.
So I want to preface this story by saying that my mom is actually here tonight, and the version of this story that she originally got was heavily censored. So, Mom, sorry, and please let me and Dad still hang out after this. So, in 2024, I drew a spring brown bear tag. So when May rolled around, my dad and I loaded up all our stuff on the boat and headed out to Fognak Island to go bear hunting. And it was just the two of us going. So before we left, my mom gave us explicit instructions to be careful. The whole ride out to a Fognak, I'm thinking to myself, there's no way we're even going to see a bear. This is just going to be a fun camping trip with my dad. Well, of course, within the first hour of the first day of hunting, I spot a bear. Dad, bear, bear. We both stop and look, and we're on the boat, so we're glassing this bear because we want to make sure that it's big enough and that it's a boar. And my dad goes, do you want to go get it? And I'm like panicking a little bit internally because we're only an hour into this hunt and I haven't even finished my coffee yet. And I'm like, this is the whole reason why I came out here. This might be my only opportunity. So yeah, let's go get it. So the bear had been kind of side-hilling on this bluff about 200 feet above the beach. So my dad drops me off at this rocky beach, and I start heading up this like vertical landslide cliff area to get up to where I could hopefully spot the bear. But the terrain was really loose. It kept sliding out from under me, and so it took me a while to get up to where I thought the bear might be. By the time I got up there, I just cannot see this bear anywhere. So I look down at my dad in the boat, and he's going like this. And I'm like, oh, crap. Because that's kind of the universal sign for get your gun up right now. So I'm thinking, I must be right on top of this bear. So I get my gun up. I'm freaking out a little bit. In about 10, 15 minutes of looking, I still don't see this bear anywhere. So I look back down at my dad, and he's looking up at me. And he goes, I don't know. Must have given us the slip. So I head back down to the boat. And when I get to the boat, I'm like, Dad, do you see the bear? And he's like, no, I haven't seen it since I dropped you off at the beach. And I'm like, why are you telling me to get my gun up then? And he's like, because you're up there with a freaking bear. which, yeah, he kind of had a point. So I look back just one more time for giggles to see, and there's the bear. It's been there the whole time, and I was right next to it, which is crazy. It's sleeping under this patch of alders. You can just see its fuzzy head. So my dad tosses anchor, and this time we both go back to the beach, and I find this big boulder that I like on the beach and set up my rest. And I'm like the opposite of a trigger-happy hunter. The feng shui has to be just right for me to want to take a shot. So I'm taking my sweet time, and finally the bear stands up. I get the shot placement that I like, and I squeeze the trigger and shoot. And the bear crumples instantly and barrel rolls down this hill and lands in an alder that's growing out over the edge of a cliff and doesn't move again. And my dad and I are like, yeah, we got him. We're high-fiving. We're pumped. Let's go get him. So I leave my gun at the beach because... Yes. Yeah. Well, it was really difficult to get up to where the bear was. So I wanted to lighten my load as much as possible. So I just bring my trekking pole and my pack, and my dad and I start making our way up to where we thought the bear was. And if you've ever hunted or hiked off trail in Kodiak, you'll understand when I say we were bushwhacking. The salmon berries were just thick, and they were taller than my head, so we were pretty much blind, fighting our way up this near vertical bluff to get to where the bear was. And at one point, we break apart. My dad veers to the right. I go up to try to get a better vantage point and spot the bear. And after what felt like forever, which was probably only about 20 minutes, I hear my dad call, "I think I found your bear." And I'm like, oh, sweet, thank God. And I start making my way down to where I heard his voice. And all of a sudden, I hear, bang, gunshots. And I'm like, Dad, bang, bang. Dad, is everything good down there? Bang, a fourth gunshot. So at this point, I start hustling down to where the gunshots are coming from. And if you'll recall, I, being an intellectual, had left my gun on the beach. But I had my trekking pole. God damn it, I was going to go help. So I make my way to where my dad is, and I see him. And he looks up at me and calmly says, "I'm fine, but the bear is still alive." And now this part of the story my dad really tells a lot better than I do, but I'm going to try to do it justice. When he had called out before that he saw my bear, he tried to go down to it because it was below him, and the ground from under his feet gave out, and he slid and fell and landed on top of the bear. And the bear went and started thrashing his head around and biting at the alder that the bear and my dad were now both in. And the way that my dad describes it is his asshole literally grabbed a salmonberry bush and yanked him back up the hill away from the bear. So I start to make my way towards my dad, and the ground gives out from under my feet, and I manage to grab an alder that's above me, and I'm dangling from this alder, and I'm in the middle of saying, "I think I need to find a different way down," and the branch snaps. And I start rolling down this hill towards my dad. I fly past my dad. He wildly grabs at me, like in a movie, and grabs my backpack. I fly out of my backpack and start just continue rolling ass over tea kettle towards the edge of this cliff, which you'll remember we're quite far above the beach. I careen over the edge of the cliff and then manage to grab one lone salmonberry root on my way off the cliff. And I slam into the cliff, and now I'm dangling from this one salmonberry root about 40 feet above this boulder-covered beach. And I'm freaking out. There's dirt in my eyes. I'm like, "Dad, help!" My dad wildly digs through my bag, throws a line down to me. Now I have to let go of my precious salmonberry root with one hand, grab the line. He pulls me back up over the edge of this cliff. And we both just lay there on stable ground for a minute, taking some deep breaths, like, oh my God, that was close. And then we remembered the bear that was still right next to us. So again, being an intellectual and also running on this point at quite a lot of adrenaline, I grab my trekking pole and go over and poke the bear. And if you've ever poked a hornet's nest, that's exactly what this felt like, because the bear went And when I tell you, I skedaddled out of there so fast and went and sat back next to my dad where it was safe until the bear passed away a couple minutes later. So then we finally managed to wrangle the bear out of this alder, which involved my dad standing on the alder out over the edge of the cliff so that we could wrestle his legs out of this tree. We got all of us back down to the boat or to the beach safely. I notched my tag, we skinned and cleaned the bear, got everything loaded back up onto the boat, and we're sitting there after what was a very emotionally and physically exhausting day. And I was having what was probably the best mandarin fruit cup I've ever had in my whole life. And my dad turns and looks at me and he says, right in my eye, he says, "Do not tell your mother about this." Sorry, Mom.
Oh my God, that story is crazy. Our next storyteller is Zoya Dorner. Zoya was born and raised right here in Kodiak. Her personal motto is simple: life is too important to be taken seriously. During the pandemic, she made what she describes as an impulse purchase, a 19-foot aluminum skiff that she proudly named the Happy Clam. Zoya is sharing this story tonight as a way to revisit a moment in her life that seemed to pass in a flash while she was living it. She believes that spending time with a story helps us understand what those moments meant and how they shape who we become. Let's welcome Zoya.
The year is 1993. I'm 16 years old and on an airplane to Moscow, Russia. To the right of me is a stranger who's holding onto a pamphlet full of pictures of young ladies. There's one that's circled. He says to me, "I'm going over to pick up my wife." And I thought, wow, a real mail order bride situation. Little did I know at the time I'd be finding some passion in Russia too. We arrived to Russia. I'm part of a handbell choir group from St. James Church here in Kodiak that's going over to play on the streets of Moscow and St. Petersburg. And there's 12 high school girls. And it's a very unusual time to be in Russia because it's only about a year after Russia came free from communism. So there's no infrastructure. There's no bus with, you know, bus to take us around, no hotel with a continental breakfast. We were actually staying with Moscow residents, and we were paired up. We learned the Moscow subway system. We all learned some Russian before we left. And our group, and there was at least one chaperone, our choir director, I remember her, and I don't really remember any other chaperones. There may have been other chaperones, but I don't remember them. Our group combined with a group of four people from Juneau. When we got to Moscow, they were like we were kind of doing like a little cultural exchange thing. There were four adults. One of them was a 22-year-old named Corey. Corey was several inches shorter than me. He had long dark hair pulled back in a ponytail, round Gandhi-like glasses. He was very quirky, funny, flirty. He's kind of a chaperone's worst nightmare, really, to have Corey with a group of high school girls. Somewhere in the middle of the trip, Corey took an interest in me. And I wasn't, you know, looking back, I'm not sure why, except that maybe I was in the throes of grief. My dad had died 6 months prior, and Corey was no stranger to grief. He had been orphaned at the age of three. He came up to Alaska and was raised by his seven aunties and grandma in Klukwan, Alaska, in his native village there. So maybe it was that Corey, somehow we connected on having lost a parent. I don't know. But anyway, Corey, we were sitting down in the Bolshoi Theater to watch a Moscow ballet. The lights are dimming, and I notice Corey sits down right next to me. And before long, he grabs my hand. And we're holding hands. I'm like, okay, I guess this is a thing here. And we're kind of together, and then he says, we're taking an overnight train ride from Moscow to St. Petersburg. And Corey says, "Hey, Zoya, you should come into my cabin." I said, "Oh, no, Corey, no, that's like breaking the rules." He's like, "Oh, come on, Zoya, like, it's fine, like, you just gotta live a little bit." I was like, "No, that's breaking the," and finally he convinced me. I was like, okay. So, tiptoeing out down, go into his cabin. He was in his shared cabin. He was in a bottom bunk with a little curtain. And he and I, you know, had a few minutes of just, you know, what for me was then passion, like fireworks exploding in the sky on this train, from nighttime train going from Moscow to St. Petersburg. I was in there for like a couple hours, I think. And the next day I was like, wow, that was wild. Like there was no room checks, no cabin checks or anything. So then the trip ends and Corey and I maintain a long-distance relationship, which in the 1993, you look like a rotary phone that you bring from the room next door, have hushed, quiet conversations because nobody's, you don't want anyone to be listening, and letter writing. And Corey would tell me how he thought I was beautiful and I should embrace my feminine side more, which I didn't really understand until like I was in my 30s. And he was very insistent about wanting to see me again. I was like, no, there's a 6-year age difference. I was like, no, it's kind of over. And he was like, no, I really want to see you once more. And I was spending the summer in Anchorage. So Corey says, hey, Zoe, I'm going to go up to Denali and see with some friends. Do you want to come? And I said, oh, no. I was staying with my mom in Anchorage. I was like, no, she would never let me. He's like, that's no way. And he said, well, you should just ask her. You never know. And I was like, no, she'll never let me. And he persisted, so I asked my mom, and she actually said, well, you know, if I meet him and he's okay, then, yeah, you can go. I was like, okay. So I'm real nervous. Corey pulls up on the day of in his black beater car, and on the back, on both side, both fenders on the back are flames painted. And on the front fenders, there's camo print, and on the driver's side door and the passenger door is bat symbols. And he gets out of the car, and I'm thinking, there's no way mom's going to let me drive up to Denali with this guy. And he comes in. He's real friendly with my mom. He shakes her hand. She invites him in. They have a nice conversation. She says, okay, Zoe, if you want to go, you can. By that time, I was 17, so maybe a little bit better than being 16. So as we're leaving, Corey says, oh, and if you want to get a hold of Zoe, there's a number, here's a phone number of the cabin we'll be staying at. So she's like, okay. So we head off, we pick up two of Corey's friends. He has a little teddy bear on the console named Hardcore. It's a black leather jacket with little studded wrist bracelets and a studded collar. And we go up north to Healy down this long road. If you've ever seen like Into the Wild, that movie, that long road, it's something like that, like in the middle of nowhere. It was probably out by that bus that was from Into the Wild. And I don't, if there was a cabin, I don't remember a cabin. I don't remember any cabin, but there was an old camper trailer, like pull behind trailer, that Corey and I slept on the top bunk and his friends slept on the bottom bunk. And, you know, it's nighttime, air quotes, in summer in Fairbanks. So we get into bed, and shortly thereafter, I feel the camper start to go like this, and then faster and faster. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, his friends are doing the horizontal mambo, like, right below us. And so I pretend to sleep. I'm like, I just freeze. I'm thinking, I hope he doesn't expect that I'm going to do that. And he doesn't, thank heavens, two nights in a row. And then we go on a fun rafting trip, and then I go home, and the relationship kind of fizzled out. It, you know, as the saying goes, the vibes weren't vibing. I was starting my senior year, and just kind of ready to move on. And there was guys locally that I was maybe more interested in than Corey. And then as my mom was passing away, we had a lot of good conversations about things, and I asked her if she remembered Corey, and she goes, oh, yeah, I remember Corey. She said, I didn't sleep for two nights. She said, that number he gave me, I called that number, and the phone just rang and rang and rang.
All right, our next storyteller is Mark Solano, who's born and raised in Chicago and has been living in Kodiak for nearly 3 years. After moving around quite a bit following college, Kodiak is the first place he's truly been able to think of as home. Mark has a knack for noticing life's unexpected humor. As he puts it, he once witnessed the birth of an inside joke. In those seemingly random, funny, absurd moments, he's reminded of Shakespeare's line that all the world's a stage. After many years of enjoying galley tables from the audience, catching glimpses of people's lives like short videos and finding moments to laugh and wonder about life, Mark decided it was time to step up and share one of his own stories in hopes of bringing a little joy to the room tonight. Please welcome Mark.
This is the story of how I got the nickname Mr. Pipe. It's not what you think. We begin with a familiar opening. A group of college students walks into a bar. Myself and a handful of other students were studying abroad in Tanzania, a country in Eastern Africa. After a day of adventures and misadventures, we end the day back on campus. And what better way to end the day than at the local dive bar? Before I can order my drink, I give myself the pat down. You gotta have your wallet, phone, keys. As fortune would have it, I was minus one wallet. Not the biggest deal, because they never asked for my ID the entire time, and I know someone would have spotted me some cash. But that's not the point. At this point in my young 20-something lives, I was a big boy. I'm a strong, independent man. I can take care of myself. So I decided to get my wallet from my room. It's only a short walk uphill, but I decided to run, so it was an even shorter trip. Now, at this time, the sun was quite down. You might even say there was no sun. It was dark. And at this point, they locked the dormitories for reasons. And of course, that's not a problem because I have my keys on me, right? Well, I do my second TSA pat-down of the day, night. Looking all through my cavities and crevices, my nooks and crannies, and apparently I am minus two of the three essential items. No wallet, no keys, I'm basically naked. What to do? I could go back downhill, borrow my roommate's key, go back up the hill, get my stuff, go back down the hill, have a few drinks, and then go back up the hill when we're done. But that's a little more cardio than I wanted to do that day. So I had to put use my big boy brain, strong, independent man, figure out what my alternate plan was. So my alternate plan was to sneak. No, that's not the right word, to lurk. No. Anyway, behind the dormitories were the windows that lead into the student rooms. And with about 90% certainty, I found that this was my room, hopefully. And it's only about a 6 foot high distance from the ground, and you can see how tall I am. It was easy. So eventually, with a little finesse and a little bit of razzmatazz, a little bit of legwork, with the grace of a graceful person, I dropped something. And I'm sorry if anyone witnessed this in real life. Eventually, I do make it inside, breaking and entering into my own room. I find my footing on top of the toilet tank, which means I'm not that far from the ground. So, just like they teach you in swimming class, you know, to push off the wall, I push off the wall. And, you know, like a one, two, three, boom, stick the landing. And it sounded kind of like that, maybe. But that's not important. There was no, don't worry about that. But anyway, I'm inside, mission accomplished. My wallet and keys are exactly where I left them. So I take this opportunity to change my clothes, wash my face. But during that time, the worst feeling in the world overtook me. You know that feeling when your sock slowly soaks up with water, its icy grip, just grabbing your ankles like a Dementor from Harry Potter? That's not good. That puddle of water was not there a few minutes ago. Okay. I put two and two together, and I conclude, well, allegedly, when I somersaulted, fell off the toilet window, I may or may not have broken the water supply for the toilet tank. So I've blessed the rains down in Africa, and there is a new swamp coming up in my room. Eventually, there will be a National Geographic special about it, but don't worry about that. At this point, you know, I'm flustered, you know, but strong, independent man, have figured this out. And it's also, like, at this point, it's dark. You should be asleep by now. What am I doing? So me and my wet socks decide to go out into the night, look across campus to find our host, the person who makes sure the students have everything that they need. I forget her real name, unfortunately, but because she takes care of her students like they're her babies, everybody calls her Mama. So I'm running around campus, splish-splashing in my wet socks, accosting anybody who comes through my way. Mama? Where's Mama? Have you seen Mama? And imagine you're in there, you're a student, just going about your business, going for a nice walk at night, and this like deranged like foreign exchange student comes by, splish-splashing in wet socks, who probably just broke into his own dorm room, and like he's asking for Mama? Like, this pervert has mommy issues. So eventually I find Mama. And after doing all this cardio, I have to compose myself and figure out how to use my big boy words. Unfortunately, the best that I can do, hey Mama, you wanna come back to my room? I got this pipe you wanna check out. Anyway, a lot of cardio, maybe I'm dehydrated. And it took a little back and forth to determine that this was not a proposition. Eventually we go back to the room, call a plumber, so on and so forth. But the people back down the hill, they have no idea this is happening. All they know is it took me an hour to find my wallet. The next day was the final day of our trip. As we were saying our goodbyes, we're hugging, oh, I'm gonna miss you. And then of course, I have to say goodbye to Mama. Mama, I'm so sorry about last night. I hope I didn't make things awkward. Let me know how I can make it better. And this got everyone's attention because we're all kind of huddled together. And she says she knows that she can throw me under the bus at this point. So she announces to the entire school, last night, Mark was so nervous, but he approached me with romantic intent. He invited me over to his room to check out his pipes. Now, I don't remember if I actually told my parents the story, but the next time I want to commit property damage, rearrange some plumbing, I might tell my mom, but I won't tell Mama.
All right, y'all. I am proud to present Fru Finn. Fru Finn has called Kodiak home for the past 45 years. First arriving with her husband and building a life in this island community. She proudly describes herself as a Disney girl at heart, someone who believes in happily ever after and a little bit of pixie dust. When it comes to music, she also admits to being a bit of a concert snob. If the seats aren't in the first 10 rows, she's probably not going. Fru lives by a simple motto, no regrets. And tonight she's here to share a story that reflects the spirit of living life fully and wholeheartedly. Welcome, Fru.
Okay. So don't tell Mom. I kind of turned it around, and I think my kids say that because they know Mom will share stories that probably shouldn't be shared. Like the time I came home from the store and my youngest daughter was home, and I go into the bathroom and there's a condom floating in the toilet.
I know.
Ew. And I said, whose condom is floating in the toilet? And without missing a beat, she says, Dad's. I had to laugh. That was pretty good. That was pretty good. Anyway, this story is about my mom's underwear, a quilt, and Donnie and Marie Osmond. Now, my mom died in 1997. She was my best friend. And when we had to go through all this stuff in her house, it was very difficult for me to let go of a lot of things. And so I opened her underwear drawer, and she had all these beautiful colored underwear. They're vanities, and they're silky. They're not bikini, not hipsters. They're the full granny panties that come all the way up to here, that you can just slide your jeans over. You don't have to lay on the bed and try to zip up your jeans. So When they're like new. See, in my head, it sounds normal. But when you say it out loud, I see that it's a little weird. But bear, just don't judge. It's okay. So I took all her rainbow-colored panties, and I just took them home and put them in my drawer. And, you rotate them, so they just kind of go on. So, it's okay. So the quilt. I was a quilter, and Donny Osmond won season 5 of Dancing with the Stars. And I had just gotten this new quilting magazine, and they had a quilt that was called Dancing with the Stars. And I thought, oh, look, it's meant to be. I'll make this quilt, and I'll give it to him in October when I go see him. So I make this quilt, and we get closer to going, and my sister and my best friend are going with me. So the day before the show, I said, I don't know if he's going to like this quilt. I don't even know if the colors of his house. So I don't think I'm going to give it to him. I think what I'll do instead is I'll save the quilt, have he and Marie sign it, and then I'll raffle it off at an auction. So that's, I said, I think that's much better use of the quilt. So anyway, the next night I go and I have the quilt and they both sign it. And, I'm standing there with the quilt and my arms around, our arms. The picture is out by the door when you came in, if you happen to see it. But anyway, we're standing there and I put my quilt in the bag. And I start to leave. And as I'm leaving, it's about 10 seconds, I would say. I turn the corner, and I'm calling my sister and my friend. Now, I don't know if you know this, but elastic has shelf life. I did not know this. Probably because most people don't have 25-year-old pairs of underwear. But, anyway, it's the weirdest thing, let me tell you. It's like, it just says, there's no warning. It just says, I don't want to hold up things anymore. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. Goodbye. Poof. It disintegrates. It doesn't even, it's no longer there. It is the weirdest thing. So I have turned the corner. I have the phone in one hand calling my friend. I have the quilt in this hand. And I said, oh, my God. I think my underwear is falling down. And I had a dress. I was all pretty, my dress. So I'm standing there like this. And my friend says, are you wearing your mom's underwear? And my sister says, you wear mom's underwear? And so I was like, let's not talk about that right now because my underwear is falling down and I'm in a casino. And so they said, just let it drop. I'm not going to leave my underwear, my mom's underwear, on the floor of a casino. So I am now like this, walking through a casino like a fool. So I said, I see a seat at the Wheel of Fortune machine, an empty seat. So here I go, over to the thing. I sit down. I put my bag, and I just put my feet into the bag, and it just slips right on in. And the man next to me, who's playing the slots, we just have a little moment. And I just turn back, and I just take my feet out like normal, and like it's no big deal, and just walk off. And walk off. So, honest to God, this happened. So, people often say, and this is like, I swear, 10 to 12 seconds after I was just standing with Donnie and Marie. Having my picture taken, thinking, oh, isn't this great? Can you imagine? So everyone says, what would you have done if they had disintegrated and just fallen down then? And without hesitation, I said, I'd say those are dads.
Our next storyteller is Davis Hovey. Originally from Virginia, Davis has called Kodiak home for the past 2 years. He enjoys learning new skills and recently picked up the sport of curling. So a quick shout out to the Kodiak Curling Club for helping fuel that new adventure. While Davis doesn't claim to have an official life motto, if pressed, he might say, life is not a spectator sport. That spirit of curiosity and participation shapes the way he moves through the world. Davis is sharing this story tonight because it reflects an important part of who he is, and because he believes that when we share more of ourselves, we strengthen our connections to one another as human beings. Let's give him a warm welcome.
It's water, I promise. This brings me back to growing up in Virginia. We won't talk about that one tonight. So I grew up in a special place called Greene County, Virginia. That's green with three E's. It lives up to the name, trust me. It's one of the most beautiful and green places I've ever seen in my life. So half of the county is suburban neighborhoods. The other half is rural farmland, the Hollers, and the Blue Ridge Mountains. I grew up in the suburban neighborhood side, and honestly, it wasn't half bad. Growing up as an only child, you kind of learn to adapt, hang out with other kids who have siblings, pretend like they're your family, at least for a day, and then you go back home and life's back to normal again. But I also was blessed with two parents who, of course, were authoritative figures, my mentors, but also my playmates, my friends, my partners in silliness. I grew up spending a lot of time with both of my parents. My dad, for example, would be out on the basketball court with me shooting hoops, practicing before he drove me to practice. He'd drive me to swim practice, to soccer practice, to band practice, all the practices. We'd be talking on the way to practice, on the way home. I'd join him in yard work. Every Saturday, he'd be out there pushing that lawnmower, and I'd maybe rake a little grass on the side. Every night, he would read the new Harry Potter book. Shout out to when J.K. Rowling was still making Harry Potter books. They were amazing. He'd also just sort of share in all of his likes and dislikes. Some of his favorite music is Three Doors Down and Nickelback. Don't ask me why. But he also sort of shared more of his habits. He would sing in this deep baritone voice. He would laugh at some things that I'm still not quite sure are funny, like the classic dad jokes, right? He'd cry at some of the most fun and in sincere moments in Disney movies, like when Bambi dies. I know we all cried during that moment, but that's when he would shed a tear. And he also got angry. The two things that made him very angry: burnt food on the stovetop, specifically when he burnt it while cooking, and bad drivers. I mean, terrible, really bad drivers. The ones that make you just want to scream at the top of your lungs. Yeah, he would do that. He would curse like a sailor, even though I know he hasn't spent much time on boats. Luckily for those drivers, they couldn't hear him as he was screaming at the top of his lungs in the closed car windows. I still remember some of those, which again, I won't share here for broadcast purposes. As time kind of went on, the dynamic between me, my mom, and my dad was sort of like the Three Musketeers. Again, as an only child, you do what you can to adapt, right? When I was 15 years old, the lawnmower suddenly cut off. One Saturday in April, my entire world was changed. The Three Musketeers dynamic was gone. No more reading Harry Potter books at night. No more singing in deep baritone voice. No more screaming at bad drivers. At the age of 15, I became the man of the house. I learned how to be a life partner to my mom. I learned how to do the yard work every Saturday on my own. I went to work at a part-time job after school on the weekdays and on the weekends. When I could drive, I'd drive myself to practice, I'd drive myself home, I'd drive to the grocery store, do whatever I could to contribute. The relationship between me and my mom became different. Not one that you would typically find between a mother and a son. A lot more responsibility was put on me, and I sort of stepped into that role naturally. But I also, if I'm being honest, resented her for it. Don't tell Mom, some days I wonder what it would have been like if she had died instead of my dad. As time went by and the pain lessened, the relationship between me and my mom changed again. After I went off to college, I would see less and less of her, but come back and sort of reconnect in different ways. We would spend more quality time together, just the two of us. We'd go on family vacations, just the two of us. We'd do holidays together, just the two of us. We'd try different activities. She'd tell me about things that she was writing. She'd encourage me to try new things. As those years went by, and looking back at them now, I've spent more than half of my life without my dad. And honestly, I wouldn't trade any of that time with my mom for anything in the world. Don't tell my mom, she's the most important person in my life. Don't tell my mom, she's the best mother and father I could ask for. Thank you.
Our next storyteller is someone that I've known my entire life, my dad, Dana Karras. Dana grew up in a suburb of Chicago, but decided that wasn't nearly adventurous enough, so in his 20s, he drove all the way to Alaska and eventually landed here in Kodiak. He spent many years as a commercial fisherman, but in his 40s, he decided to reinvent himself and went to trade school to become an electrician. He's always been a little feisty, never afraid to stand up for the underdogs of the world or go against the grain. He's also surprisingly open to anything a little hippy-dippy. He's an avid juicer, a dedicated cold plunger, and he's even been so bold as to try hot yoga. Honestly, at this point, we're all just waiting for him to open a juice bar and start leading sunrise plunges. So, welcome my dad, Dana.
So my story goes is about yoga, okay? And I just happen to have a daughter that teaches yoga. I won't mention any names, but her initials are Tondi Lacey. So anyway, I'm taking two yoga classes, beginning yoga. I was the first person, maybe the first. Veronica, you're here. Was I the first? Okay, anyway. Well, anyway, I think I was first or second to be Sam Jordan's beginning yoga student. And I've stuck with him. I'm still in Sam Jordan's beginning yoga student. Yeah. But I'm also hot yoga student. And my daughter went to training for that in California, and it was brutal. And we'd get calls in the middle of the night. They're still having us practice at 2 in the morning. We have to watch videos of Indian bell, what do they call it? Whatever. Anyway, come on, Tandy. Anyway, so, but there's quite a difference between these two yogas, you know. So in Sam's class, beginning yoga, you do a stretch, you know, like this, and then up on your toes. And that's like, that's big deal, right? And you'll stretch, and you go like this, and then you go like this, and then it really gets good, and you go like this. Now, Tandy's a little different, okay? And so they got these, you know, different stretches, and some of them are kind of similar between the two. Like in Sam's class, you'll do a balance deal, and, you know, 1 foot out like that. Yeah, well, Tani's a little different. They figure, well, you know, how about this? Yeah, and then she has the audacity to say, eventually you'll get that foot all the way up over your head so you'll be able to see that in the mirror. And I'm like, let me think about that. No. And she says, and they heat the room up to 100 degrees. They're trying to get to 105. We never made it, but 103, got to 103. This kid is a sweater. And then she says, excuse me, I'm sorry, I just have to say it. Don't wipe your face. What? Don't wipe your face. I mean, sweat is dripping down. Wham. It's making puddles on the floor. And, well, you know, that's not happening, okay? I'm going to wipe. And at the end of the day, this towel is soaked. Well, one day I decided to bring my friend to yoga because he's getting older, too, and, you know, I have to loosen up. So he makes it through this whole thing. When it's all done, he stumbles up to me, you know, and he says, Dana. And he's kind of in a daze. You can't, not really focusing, you know. He says, I don't know how you do this. And I thought, my God, I must really be something. This is really cool. I made it. And then I stumble out the room right behind him. And I go out and I get in the car. And I adjust the mirror. Seats a little bit. Needs to get adjusted. I adjust the seat back. And I go to start it. And the keys are left in the ignition. And I was like, wow, I can understand being spaced out after yoga. But I don't remember leaving the keys in the ignition. But okay. Anyway, I'm not going to worry about it. Start the car and drive all the way home. When I get home, I shut the keys off. And I look at the keys, and I said, these aren't my keys. I drive all the way back, and there's Veronica, and this lady who owns the car that I just stole. Her husband's a lawyer. And Skip's out there too, okay? And I walk up and don't say a word, put the keys in her hand, and Skip says, the police are on the way. So anyway, yeah, and last night I just had another session, and I didn't get in the wrong car, okay? It was a positive. But when I did drive home, I turned on the wrong street. So if you see me going around town, you know, about 9 o'clock at night, was it Thursday night, and it looks like I might not know where I'm going, you might even give Tanya a call. But whatever you do, don't tell Mom.
Thanks, Dana. I think that like season four of Galley Tables, we actually had another mistaken car story. And the person whose car that person took, they were like, hey, that was my car. They were in the front row. Okay, so our last storyteller tonight is Rob Evans. Rob Evans is originally from California and has been living in Kodiak for the past 8 months. He's a creative at heart. He's the author of a self-published children's book that you can find on Amazon. There's no title, but maybe you can advertise it when you're up here. Since arriving on the island, Rob has been eager to jump in and be part of Kodiak's uniquely vibrant community. Tonight, he's stepping up to the Galley Table stage as one way of getting involved, sharing a story, and becoming part of the tradition of storytelling that brings this community together. Let's welcome Rob.
A lot of riffraff in the audience tonight. I don't know if you guys noticed that. Hey, can we give it up to the... Let's give it up for the Galley Gals. All right? It's a new name I made up, Galley Gals. I know Tawny's got two little kids and a full-time job is a labor of love. I'm sure y'all are just as busy, so yeah, thanks. Anyway, Rescue Rob Saves Christmas. That's the name of the book on Amazon. If anybody, write this off of my taxes. So I wrote a poem tonight. I tried to memorize it, so bear with me. There might be some awkward pauses. It's funny, you gotta memorize until you come up here. Don't have it quite as memorized. All right, here we go. What is a brother? It's a mediocre gift that you get from your mother. If siblings are Christmas gifts in a colorful square box, sometimes a big brother is like a pair of socks. It's the type of gift that you don't want to keep, but you have to, because there is no receipt. Because this other little human that my mom created, sometimes it gets a little complicated. It's like his brain and mine are total opposites. Our heads are only similar because of the hair we lost on top of it. Actually, thank God that he is bald. Otherwise, he would have gotten it all. I don't know if you believe in luck or not, but if intelligence were poker chips, my brother won the pot. He is so smart, like a walking computer. Meanwhile, I was pretty much raised by tutors. Before he graduated high school, I did not know that that a GPA could go higher than a 4.0. And this intelligence gap put our relationship in doubt. It's hard to connect when you don't know what he's talking about. And I know gossip in our society is very commonplace, but I proudly praise him behind his back and talk trash to his face. All that to say, it was a lifelong request of our mom that one day him and I would get along. But I questioned her again and again. I said, why force it with a brother when I could just choose my friends? But it was the same cliche joke from my mother. My dad had a vasectomy and I'll never get another. But we did find. Oh, sorry. I did find, even in the midst of strife, we got along best when we sort of risked our life. There's a certain bond and a brotherly cohesion when you ride your makeshift raft over a waterfall in New Zealand. And nothing will fix sibling conflicts like trespassing through a country club to jump off private cliffs. When I tell my mom of our adventures, she'd put her hand on her jaw and say, can you two be friends without breaking the law? She didn't want to hear how we had jumped off piers in the middle of the night. And I said, would you rather me tell you of all our little fights? I said, Mom, two things can be true. We are better friends when you don't approve. So from then on, to preserve the sanity of my mother, I omitted certain details when I told stories about my brother. And now I raise two little boys, and it would be a damn shame if I didn't teach them to do the exact same. So fast forward to 2009. We both lived in Southern California at the time. One day, my brother calls me, and I said, what's up? He said, I'm looking at SeaWorld. I said, so what? He explained how it backed up to a bay, and depending on the tide, him and I might be able to swim inside. So the next day, the best plan that we had was putting our shirts and flip-flops into a Ziploc bag, and we made that swim across the span of the bay. We spent the whole day in SeaWorld without having to pay. And as the sun made its arc in the summer sky, it's one of the best memories of my brother and I. And I was driving home. My mom just happened to call me on the phone, and she asked what I was doing. And I said, I'm just going to say that Ryan and I got along today. And she said, I love hearing that you two are having fun without the specifics of what you have done. Because my mom had a brother, and I'd like to think that she knew that even good friends go through a storm or two. And growing up, I'm fairly sure that she knew I tried my best as a favor to her. But I was getting older, and I had realized by then that you can love someone without always liking them. So time went on, hands on the clock, moved around. My brother and I had our ups and downs, but we put our differences aside and out of our mind as our mom's health started to decline. A few days before she passed, I sat by her side, and I could tell that it was almost her time. And her breath was shallow, and her gaze was far. And she asked, are you two friends still? And I said, yeah, Mom, we are. Thank you.
Thank you. What a great night. What amazing stories. Can we have another round of applause for our storytellers? That was an incredible show. Thank you so much for being here with us. Thank you for filling the room. And for all of those of you that stood, thank you so much for staying with us. You can hear tonight's stories on KMXT and KODK. You can look at them on our website, and you can also hear the rebroadcast of them on KMXT.
Next month's theme is Deckhand Diaries and More, because it's been kind of difficult to get people to sign up for that theme. So if you've got a great story and you feel like telling a story, just go ahead and sign up. It doesn't really matter what it's about. That's our last one for the season. So it's April 3rd, the first Friday, and we hope to see you all there. So
have a great month. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Galley Table Storytelling is made possible through a partnership with the Kodiak Arts Council and Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation. Visit us online at galleytables.com to find the date and location of the next live storytelling event. You can also browse our archives and listen to past stories or sign up to be a storyteller. Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life.